Baruchim Abayim, ladies. We're studying Parashat Vayishlach. Parashat Vayishlach is actually the model Parashah to teach us how to deal with Esav. Esav would represent the Goyim. Yaakov represents the Jews. The Torah is not a storybook or a history book. Anything that's written in the Torah is a lesson in order to teach us, just like Yaakov dealt with Esav, and he was successful. Learn from what he did, and you will be successful also dealing with the Goyim amongst us. The first thing Yaakov Avinu did was he prayed, which is obviously always a method to protect us from anything, certainly from anti-Semitism and the nature of Gentiles. But also, he bribed. He sent gifts. From here you learn another method of Yaakov Avinu, that the Goyim have a soft spot when it comes to gifts and bribes. It's an important lesson to remember that. Person has help. Person has his mailman or his domestic help in the house. Goyim respond positively to bribes and money and gifts, not always with logic, but with benefits. The third thing he prepared for was for milhama, was for war. In the event that the prayers weren't answered or the gifts would be rejected, he prepared himself for the final last-ditch attempt, he might have to fight Esav. But he was scared, it says. He was scared. Vayira Yaakov me'od vayetzilo. What was he scared of? Yaakov Avinu scared of Esav? Yaakov Avinu was a giant in strength. I want you to remember that. When he came to the well in last week's Perashah, there was a rock on the well. All the shepherds were gathering. He says, "What are you doing, fellas?" He said, "We're waiting till we get 100 shepherds so we can lift the rock off." Yaakov Avinu goes to the well, tick. He flips the rock off. The Gemara compares it to somebody opening a bottle of soda. It was nothing. It was easy to him. He's scared of Esav. Yaakov Avinu wrestled with an angel. And he beat the angel. So what is he scared of, Yaakov and Esav? If Esav goes like this, Yaakov Avinu will take him, will throw him 100 miles and kill him in 5 seconds. What is he scared of? So the rabbis tell us, it wasn't a physical fear that he had, it was a spiritual fear. Esav had 2 mitzvot that Yaakov didn't have. Number one, honoring his parents. Yaakov didn't honor his parents? He couldn't. For 22 years, he was in Lavan's house. He didn't have parents to respect. So therefore, he was missing that mitzvah for 22 years. Where was Esav? With Yitzhak, with Rivka. He was able to do for them. He was able to help them. So Yaakov Avinu was scared. Maybe the zechut of kibud av ve'em, of honoring parents, is going to stick for Esav. There was another thing he was scared of. Yaakov lived in Laban's house. It was outside of Israel. Esav lived in Israel. The zechut of living in Israel is so great. Now my gifter says, so great, even though Esav didn't care about Israel, even though Esav wasn't thinking about the mitzvah of living in Israel, even though Esav couldn't care less if he was in Israel or if he was in Honolulu, but bottom line, he was in Israel. And the zechut of living in Israel is so great, it can sometimes put you over the top, and even Yaakov Avinu was scared. He says, "I'm living outside, he's in. He's got something over me." Should be pointed out, ladies, of course there's much apprehensiveness in traveling to Eretz Yisrael regarding the situation that's taking place there today. Even though Baruch Hashem it seems to have mellowed down a little, at least we don't hear it as much on the news as we've been hearing, it should be pointed out, we still must make trips to Eretz Yisrael, and we shouldn't be scared to travel to Eretz Yisrael. if we have bar mitzvahs to be made, certainly Eretz Yisrael should be our first choice, then Honolulu, and then Mexico, and then all the other places that are made for bar mitzvahs. But the first place should be Eretz Yisrael. We shouldn't give up yet. Don't give up hope yet on Eretz Yisrael. People just came back, they told me how beautiful their trips were, how good the land is, and how important it is to support the economy. There's really, again, a reason to re-encourage us. Every four steps you take in Israel, you're fulfilling a mitzvah from the Torah. The land, the air in Israel makes you a smarter person, the Gemara says. Avirah de'eris Yisrael machkim. You just breathe the air. It enters your brain, and your brain cells wake up, you become smarter. Therefore, if you have an opportunity to visit, certainly one should do so. And what I want to tell you today, I saw an amazing, amazing explanation. I finally saw the depth of the explanation. Rabbis tell us, we have three holidays. Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. So a rabbi called the Tur says, Pesach corresponds Avraham Abinu. Shavuot corresponds Yitzhak. Sukkot corresponds Yaakov. What's the connection? So he explains. Avraham corresponds Pesach because it says when the guests came to visit Avraham, he made for them matzot. Why did he make for them matzot? Because it was Pesach. So you see there's a connection between Avraham and Pesach. His hospitality was on Pesach. And it has to do with Avraham Avinu's trait. Chesed. Hospitality. He's serving. So you see Avraham, Chesed, Pesach. Beautiful. Yitzhak is Shavuot. What's the connection between him and the holiday of Shavuot? After Avraham took Yitzhak off the Mizbeach, there was a ram that was supposed to be put instead of Yitzhak. They put the ram on the Mizbeach. But what did they do with the horns of that ram? One of the horns of Akedat Yitzhak was used at Matan Torah. When the Jews received the Torah, they blew the shofar. Where did that horn come from? Where did that shofar come from? From the ram of Akedat Yitzhak. So you see there's a connection between Yitzhak and Shavuot. After all, it was his ram that they used to blow at Matan Torah. And there's a connection between Yitzhak's trait. His trait is self-sacrifice. He sacrificed himself as a Qurban. The holiday of Shavuot, Torah is only acquired with self-sacrifice. So I understand the trait of Yitzhak, Shavuot, the Shofar, self-sacrifice. What does Yaakov have to do with Sukkot? Amazing. Torah tells us in this week's Perasha, after the encounter of Yaakov and Esav, where does Yaakov go? Goes to a place, and he builds huts. He builds Sukkot for his animals. He puts his animals in Sukkot and he calls the place Sukkot. So because Yaakov Avinu built Sukkot for his animals and he named the place Sukkot, so the holiday of Sukkot corresponds to Yaakov. That's the hardest one to understand. So what? So he builds a couple of Sukkot for his animals. What's the connection between Yaakov, Sukkot, animals? What is he doing in the first place? I understand Abraham. He gave matzot on Pesach, Chesed. I understand Yitzhak, Shofar, Torah, Mesilut Nefesh. That's his trait. What's Yaakov Avinu? Because he built some huts for his animals. So the holiday of Sukkot is designated for him. Listen to a wonderful explanation from a rabbi called Arab Bergman. Explains like this. Why did Yaakov Avinu build these Sukkot for his animals? So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says, because Yaakov was teaching us that since you get benefit from these animals, since these animals provide you a livelihood, since these animals benefit you, you have to have hakarat hatov to them. You have to have gratitude to them. How do you have gratitude to an animal? You build it a hut, so it's out of the sun, out of the wind, out of the rain. Yaakov Avinu had such a sense of gratitude that he patented a new chiddush. Till now, you have gratitude to people. Yaakov was the first one to invent a system. Hakarat tatov, gratitude to his animals. So the Torah goes out of its way and says, he built for his animals Sukkot to show us that if you derive benefit from something, you must be gracious. That's Yaakov Avinu's trait. He's a gracious man. He shows gratitude. His gratitude knows no bounds. Even to an animal. You remember the story of Yosef? Yosef, his son, is in Egypt. He's tempted to be with the wife of Potiphar, the wife of his master. What stopped him? He didn't commit the sin, but something stopped him. So it's correct. He saw the image of his father. He saw the image of his father in his head. And he remembered Yaakov Avinu. He said, I can't do it. What did he remember about Yaakov? So the rabbis tell us amazing. He remembered how gracious his father was. How kind he was even to the animals. Yosef said, my master Potiphar has been very good to me. He gave me a job. He's giving me a living. He's giving me parnasah. Now I'm going to take my master's wife? What kind of ungrateful thing is that? What kind of lack of hakarat hatov? What type of ungrateful behavior is that? Man provides you a living and you go take his wife? It's the epitome of somebody that is ungrateful. When he saw his father's image, he remembered what his father did even for animals. And therefore he said, if my father has such a karatatov to animals, I have to have a karatatov to human being. Let me tell you one more thing. You remember when Yosef got into this whole mess with his brothers? You know how it started? Yosef was at home. The brothers were out doing some shepherd work. You know what Yaakov Avinu tells his son? Go out to the field and find out what's doing with the sheep. So he tells him, go find out what's doing with the sheep. So the rabbi said, go find out what's doing with the sheep? Who cares what's doing with the sheep? They're sheep. But what's doing with the sheep? Yaakov was teaching Yosef, yes, go out and find out what's going with the sheep, because you even have to have a karat hatov to a sheep. Because bottom line, they're benefiting us. He drilled that lesson into Yosef, and it worked. Because when Yosef was in Egypt, he remembered the image of his father. He remembered how gracious he was, and therefore he said, I can't do it. That's the connection between Yaakov Avinu and the holiday of Sukkot. Because he built Sukkot for his animals, that epitomizes the essence of the trait of Yaakov Avinu. A man that his thanks shows no bounds. And therefore, yes indeed, the fact that he built Sukkot teaches us who Yaakov Avinu was. Not just a mere story, big deal, he built some Sukkot for animals. No, that's, now you know who Yaakov Avinu is. And that's why the holiday of Sukkot also corresponds to that trait. Torah tells us that Yaakov Avinu splits up his camps. He says, if Esav is successful in beating part of my family, at least the other family will run away. He was smart. He didn't put all his eggs in one basket. If all of them are going to travel together, he's vulnerable. Esav can come wipe them all out. So the Gemara says he took part of his family in one group, and there was one day distance. It wasn't just like 50 feet or 100 yards. A one-day distance between the two camps. So the rabbis ask, isn't that a little exaggerated? A one-day distance between the two camps? What was he thinking? So our rabbis tell us ingeniously. Rivka told Yaakov Avinu in a prophecy that Yaakov and Esav are going to die on the same day. And that happened, by the way. They did ultimately die on the same day. He knew that. So he says like this, I have a plan. I'll travel in the first group,
if Esav kills me, since there's a day's distance between the second group, by the time he gets there, he'll be dead. So there was an ingenious plan over here on Yaakov Avinu's part over here. He knew exactly how to ensure that his family will remain alive. Hence, the one-day distance. One of the parts of this parasha which always boggled me was when Yaakov Avinu was wrestling with this angel. The famous wrestling match between Yaakov and the Malach. Who was the Malach anyway? The Malach was the angel of Esav. Some might call him the Yetzer Hara. Others might call him the Satan. It's all the same guy. Satan, Yetzer Hara, Malach of Esav. It's all the same criminal, the same gangster. And Yaakov wrestled with him. But where did he meet up with him? So the Torah tells us a very funny story. Since he was traveling with his family, they get to a river called the River of Yabok. Yaakov Avinu says, "Oh, I forgot something on the other side of the river." "What did you forget?" $1 million? "The keys to the vault." "What did you forget, Yaakov?" He says, "I forgot Pachim Ketanim." What's Pachim Ketanim? Small jugs. Value, 99 cents. And what does Yaakov do? I got to go back. Yaakov, it's the middle of the night. You're going to cross the river now alone? Endanger your life for what? For a 99 cent item? Leave it. You're a rich man. What do you need it for? How do we explain this over here? So the Gemara, in trying to explain it, says something even more baffling. The Gemara says, "Hey, you see a lesson. That tzaddikim love their money more than they love themselves." Shema Yisrael. That's what I was scared to say. And then the Gemara comes along and says, "Yeah, that's it. See how much they love their money? We don't love money like that. The 99 cents, throw it away, leave it, we'll get a new one." Not Yaakov. How do we explain this Gemara? They love their money so much that they're willing to exert so much energy, cross the river. And by the way, once he got to the other side of the river, who was standing there waiting for him? The angel of Esav. "Put up your dukes." Okay, but we want to understand, what was he thinking? So I saw a wonderful explanation. Based on a story. Mashal. There was a poor man. He had nothing. Destitute. He had his bed and one pair of clothes. He didn't even have a cup for Netilat Yadayim in the morning. Imagine that. So he turned to God before he went to sleep one night. He's crying like a baby. He says, "God, I don't ask you for too many things. I'm not asking you for wealth. I'm not asking you for luxuries. I'm not asking you for anything. One item, a Netilat Yadayim cup. Small, little, nothing. One cup so I can wash my hands." Next morning he wakes up. He looks under his bed. Sure enough, there's a Netilat Yadayim cup with a note attached. "Dear friend, here's the Netilat Yadayim cup you requested before you went to sleep. Love, God." Wow, I can't believe it. Open miracle. He's shaking. He picks up the cup. He kisses it. He cherishes it. He makes the Netilat Yadayim. He locks it up. This cup over here is his prized possession. And everybody sees in the street, you can't believe what happened. "God sent me a cup down for the..." A few weeks later, he hit Lotto. He became billionaire. Now he's going to move to a mansion. He's going to live the good life. So he tells the movers, "Bring all my junk. Bring it to the new estate. It's 100 miles away." He gets to the estate. The moving truck comes. He's emptying out everything off the truck. He tells the movers, "There was a cup underneath my bed. Where is it?" "That little junk? We left it there. What did it just? We kept it. What do you need a cup like that for? A plastic cup? It's worthless. You'll get another one." He's, "What? The cup?" He gets in his car, drives 100 miles. "It's noon. You're driving 100 miles for an Netilat Yadayim. Don't you understand? God gave me this cup. This cup over here is priceless. You know the value of this cup?" That's exactly how Yaakov Avinu looked at his money. Every item that God, or that was in Yaakov Avinu's possession,
he looked at as if it was a gift from God, and God gave it to him. Therefore, it wasn't that he loved his money. He loved the one that gave him the money. And therefore, if God found it correct that he should have these small jugs, obviously there's a reason for it. If those jugs found their way to his pocket, it's only God. Obviously, any money that's found in your possession can only be there if God willed it. And if God willed it, obviously there's a reason, because he wants to use that money or that possession for a purpose. If it's China, it's needed to serve God to have that Shabbat v'Yom Tov. If it's a table, it's in order to serve Borei Olam with guests. If it's clothes, it's in order to dress dignified, in order to make a sanctification of God's name, that Jewish people are kept well and look presentable. Everything that God gives you can be and must be used to serve him. Otherwise you wouldn't have it. Listen to what Ruva say. Anything. The food that's on your table is there so you can eat in order to serve God. The basketball in the garage is there so your children will have an outlet in order to clear their minds, to let off some energy, so they'll have strength and peace of mind to study in yeshiva, Gemara. The treadmill in the basement serves the same purpose. Everything. There is no such thing in our religion that is for the sake of physical. If it finds its way into our homes, of course it's a permissible item, then that item must be used and channeled for God. Yaakov understood that. So he says, I don't know what I'm going to use these jugs for. Maybe one day I'll make kiddush with them. Maybe one day I'll make netilat shadayim with them. Maybe one day somebody's going to need to borrow these from me. But if I have them, I better go back for them. So he's willing to travel over the waters, not because he loves money, because he loves the God that gave him the money. That's the explanation of what Yaakov Avinu was doing. And then the battle. The angel wrestles with Yaakov the whole night. Rav Elchanan Wasserman, Zecher Tzaddik Levracha, God should avenge his death. He died brutally by the hands of the Nazis, Rav Elchanan Wasserman. He asks a great question. Where was the angel when it came to Avraham Avinu? We don't see any angel fighting with Avraham. Where was the angel when it came to Yitzhak? What provoked the angel to start up with Yaakov? Well, Avraham's not a tzaddik. Yitzhak's not a tzaddik. How come they didn't have this challenge of having to fight with an angel? What was so special about Yaakov that the angel had to annihilate him? So Rav Elchanan says, Yesod shebi yesodot. Most important lesson. What's Avraham Avinu's trait? Chesed. Charity, benevolence, hospitality. That did not threaten the Satan. The Satan says, if that's the only trait that the Jews will have, chesed, I'm not threatened. You can't build a people just based on charity. Just based on benevolence. Goyim also have charity organizations. Goyim also have hospitals. Goyim also have different institutions of kindness. That won't make a people. If all it is chesed, chesed all day long, the Jews will collapse. Came Yitzhak. What did Yitzhak represent? Sacrifice. It's the temple, the Beit HaMikdash. Today we have no temple, so Yitzhak represents synagogue attendance. That took the place of the temple, took the place of the Beit HaMikdash. Satan said, praying? Very important. But if that's all Jews do is pray, I got no problem with them. Synagogue attendance cannot hold a nation and stop them from assimilation, because the Reform also have temples. And the conservative also have whatever they call their institutions of prayer. So the Satan says, no problem. Hesed, Avraham, good luck. Be successful. Yitzhak, want to build all the shoes in the world? No problem. The Jews will not have a perpetuation just with Hesed and synagogue. Came Yaakov Avinu, what does he represent?
Torah.
Now he met his match. He says, if he gets through the system, then the Jewish people have existence. It is Torah, ladies, that makes us a nation. And only Torah that makes us a nation. It is Torah that has kept the Jewish people united and non-assimilated for all these years. Just think about it. Any sect of Judaism that has abandoned Torah has abandoned itself. Reform. They don't learn Torah. Where are they today? The majority of their constituents have married out of the religion. But they go to shul. They do chesed. Their name is on every hospital. But they don't learn. You don't learn? Finished. It's over. Conservative the same. Shuls they have. Navdil. Chesed they have. Learning they don't have. The only sect in religion of Judaism that is very, very strict on learning is Orthodoxy. And that's what has kept us. Don't misunderstand me. Not to minimize chesed and not to minimize prayer. But if it's not joined with study of Torah, we're doomed. That's why the Satan says we got to kill this man Yaakov, because he represented Torah. He represented that learning. Was he successful? No. But what he did do, he gave Yaakov a shot in the thigh, in a vein. Call it the sciatic nerve. It was a debilitating blow. The Torah tells us Yaakov Abinu limped away from that story. And because of that, Jews until today are not allowed to eat the sciatic vein in an animal, which is called Gid HaNasheh. Just as a side point, that's usually the best meat where the Gid HaNasheh is. That's the T-bone steak, that's the sirloin steak. The best meat that the Goyim eat in the best steak restaurants, that's exactly where the Gid HaNasheh is. Okay, it's Asur. Why? Because he hit him in the thigh. What does it symbolize? It symbolizes the following. The thighs hold up a person. Person cannot stand without his thighs. The thighs are the support of man. He wasn't able to get Torah. Torah is Yaakov. Couldn't kill him. So you know who he went after? The supporters of Torah. The Zohar said, if I can't get the learner, if I can't get the Torah learner, the rabbi himself, let me go after the wealthy man that supports Torah. And that's why, until today, and check it out for yourselves, there's probably not a yeshiva in the world that's in the black. There's no yeshiva that is studying pure Torah that can boast they have enough money, they have enough support, they have enough benefactors. Why? That's from the blow of Esav. He was able to put a shot in the supporters of the Torah, and unfortunately we hear this all too often. Men complain. We have to support the yeshiva, we have to support the kollel. Parasites. They're sitting and reading all day long. I go to work. I work very hard for my living. They sit down by a book all day long. It's an easy life. So I have to support lazy behavior. I have to support a life of passiveness where they just sit down and loaf in front of a book drinking a cup of coffee. Not interested in such things. Where does those ideas come from? That's the Satan. When he hit the support of Torah, all those ideas entered our minds. And therefore, there's always that cynical attitude. What do we need the kollelim for? We have enough rabbis.
We have enough learners. What they don't realize is who's supporting who. Let me explain that to you. There was a fellow, a businessman. His son-in-law was a rabbi. He demanded from him that he lives by him and he will support him full salary to study. He thought it was a zechut for him to support his son-in-law. He did it for several years. Finally, they come to him from a different town. They come to the young rabbi. Listen, you're talented. We want to bring you to our city to become the rabbi. He says, you know what? Derech Eretz, let me ask my father-in-law first. He's been supporting me for many years. So he goes to his father-in-law. His father says, no, no way. You can't go anywhere. Stay right here. You want a raise? I'll give you a raise, but you can't go anywhere. So I didn't ask for a raise. I just wanted to... You're staying. A year later, they send another emissary. Please, we need you to come to this town. We want you to make become the Rav of the town. Let me ask my father-in-law. You can't go anywhere. You have to stay. I need you. The third time, the rabbi's wife said, don't even ask my father. It's not right. He can't hold us back. We have to go, move on in our lives. We're getting a position over here. How long is he going to support us for? We're going. Don't ask. So he went to his father, he says, I'm going. You can't go, you can't go, you can't. I'm going. He gets on the carriage, taking the horses out of the town, and the father-in-law is standing there. And he says, please don't go. And the daughter turns to her father and says, how long are you going to support us for, Daddy? And the father turns to them and says, who knows who's supporting who? The carriage left the town. That day, the father died. You understand the story? This man understood what he was doing. For the few dollars that I'm giving you, you think I own you? You think I bought you? You think I'm supporting you? You're studying Torah. You're keeping the world in existence. For a few dollars, you're getting life. For a few dollars, you're connecting yourself to oxygen. You're connecting yourself to Hayenetzach, to eternity. Who's supporting who? And that's what Esav was successfully doing. When he hit the leg, he was hitting those supporters. Then, after the fight was over, there's a very, very mysterious conversation that took place between Yaakov and the angel. What's the conversation? Yaakov Avinu asks the angel, what's your name? This is after the angel asks him his name. He says, oh, my name is Yaakov. He says, okay, well, we're changing your name. Your name is no longer Yaakov. Your name is now Yisrael. Right there, Yaakov got the name changed. So Yaakov asks back, oh, what's your name? So what does the angel answer back? Lama zeh tish'al lishmi. What are you asking my name for? What do you mean? You asked me my name. I told you my name. I didn't hide any information. Yaakov, I'm asking you your name. And what is his answer? What's the difference anyway? And even a stronger question, Yaakov. He's asking you your name because he has an interest. He wants to make a name change. What do you care what his name is? If his name is Joe, if his name is Jack, if his name is Isab, if his name is Gehinnam, what's the difference what his name is? You're going to start it matters? So I saw an explanation. Yaakov Abinu is talking to the Satan. This is the Yetzer Hara. He's got a private conversation with him. He's going to ask him now the most important question. He's asking the Satan the following. What is your essence? Tell me your secret. What makes you tick? What's your trick? Tell me your name. The name of a person describes his essence. Yaakov Abinu figured if he can get this information out of the Satan, to figure out what his method is in tricking us, he has the key information now. So what is your name? It's not a mere formality. How do you do? What's your name? Where are you from? Wasn't that? What does your name mean? What is your essence? What is your being? He was really asking,
tell me the trick that you possess to fool people. And then he's going to use that information to tell it to his children. All right, I spoke to the Satan. He uses this method. He uses this tactic. Now we can beat him. Satan understood the question very well. And you know what the Satan answered? What are you asking my name for? It doesn't pay. Because I have many names and I have many tricks. And the tricks that I use in one generation, I don't use in another generation. So it doesn't matter what I tell you. If I tell you my trick now, it's not going to help you for the next generation and for the generation after that. For example, sometimes the Satan comes in the form of idolatry. Do you know there was a time in Jewish history where the biggest lust was for idolatry? A Jew walked by an idol, he had to bow down to it. He couldn't control himself. You think to yourself, well, what's the mystique? What's the lure into bowing down to an idol? You can't imagine it. It was so serious that the rabbis had to pray that yetzer hara gets destroyed. We couldn't handle it. Great, great people, they walked by the church, they had to walk in. That was that yetzer hara. In another generation, the yetzer hara takes on a different image. Enlightenment. In the 1700s and the 1800s, when the reform movement started, he came in the form of intellectualism, communism, socialism. The yetzer hara does not use the same tactics for every generation. He's constantly progressing and updating and changing. Today, Avodah Zarah is not our problem. Yetzer hara gave up on that one. Communism and socialism, he gave up on that. Today, maybe the yetzer hara, he comes in a different ism. Materialism. That's the yetzer hara's, that's his attraction in our generation. Toys, things, items, shopping, buying, having things, acquiring things, amassing things. That's the yetzer hara today. We're all guilty of such a yetzer hara. In other generations, that wasn't a lure. Today, that's what it is. And Acham ben Sion says, he's fooling you. Don't get fooled, but he's fooling you. Because you think that all this buying is going to make you happy. That's why we do it. I mean, there's no better feeling. You walk into a store, you see something you like, and the yetzer hara sometimes tells you, buy it. This will bring you happiness. It's here. It's in this box. And you say, you know something? I deserve it. I have a right. I didn't steal the money. It's my money. So you buy. When you buy it, you feel awesome. You feel excited. Look what I bought. But the next day, it wears off. The item that you thought's going to bring you ultimate happiness. Now you move on to that. It wasn't this. This was a mistake. But the next item, that's the real item. Chaim ben Sion compares it to a young boy. A young boy, 7 years old, comes home. He tells his father, Daddy, please, buy me a yo-yo. What do you want a yo-yo for? Please, I saw my friend has a yo-yo. I'll be the best boy. I'll do my homework. He can't see past the yo-yo. Father brings home the yo-yo. Next day, I love you. He's happy. He's playing with it. He can't see past the yo-yo. He gets to be 10 years old. He says, Daddy, I have a confession to make. I made a mistake. I got fooled. I thought the yo-yo was going to bring me happiness. What's a yo-yo? It's garbage. It's junk. What's a yo-yo? Bicycle. Get me a bicycle and finish it. It's over. In his mind, he can't imagine what could be better than a bicycle. And then I'll be happy. Father says, okay, here's a bicycle. He comes 16, 17 years old. He says, Daddy, what's a bicycle? You got fooled, my son. I got fooled. Car. So he gets him a car. Then from one car to a better car. First he gets an American car. Then he has to get a Chutzla Aris car. Then he keeps on getting better cars. And then he moves on to, then he has all the cars. Are you happy now? Everybody has a car. What's a car? Car's not there. Car's a necessity. I need
this. And so he's 80 years old. And he's still looking. He's saying, well, the last time, I'm not going to get sketched again. This is the item. And he goes and he gets the item. And then he realized that didn't bring him happiness also. But that's the Yetzirah's trick today. Thank God we know the trick. I'm not saying don't buy things. I'm not saying don't spend money. And if you need things to have, I'm not saying that. But know that that's not where your happiness is going to come from. Sure, you have to buy clothes, you have to buy jewelry, but I'm saying no. The attitude that we're trying to instill in you is, don't think that that's where your happiness is going to come. It's not going to come from things. Things, put this in the rule book, things, items can never make people happy. Happiness can only come from what we're doing right now. Because this goes right into the soul. This goes right into the neshama. When you come out of this class, or any Torah class for that matter, there's a certain happiness that you have. You can't explain it, but you feel good, you're at ease. You know you did the right thing. It's a very rewarding feeling. That's where the happiness is. You'll never regret tomorrow morning when you wake up, you'll say, all right, that class really didn't do anything for me. No. This feeling doesn't subside, doesn't get weaker, it only gets stronger. And that's exactly what we're learning from the Perasha. Things cannot make a person happy. Only Torah can bring true happiness to a person. Lastly, so of course that's what it means when he asked the Satan, what's your name? Satan said, what's the difference? Today you'll know my name, tomorrow I change my name. And the next generation I change my name. And every generation the Satan uses different masks in order to cover himself up. The last chedush will say, on the Perasha, Yaakov Avinu hears that his daughter Dinah was raped. Really a terrible story. Imagine Yaakov Avinu, the tzaddik, and this happens to his daughter, and they come back and they tell him. And the Torah tells us his reaction. He kept quiet until his children came home. He didn't react. Ve'chirish Yaakov ad bo'am. He was silent until his kids came home, until the tribes came home, and then they discussed it, and then Shimon and Levi went out and killed the whole town. But the Gemara tells us, Yaakov's reaction shows us how wise he was. Where do you see the wisdom? I tell you, your daughter's raped. He keeps quiet. Why didn't he start screaming? You behemoth, you animals, we're going to kill you. I mean, that's what his sons said when they came home. When his sons found out, they said, what? This will not happen. Intolerable. We will not let the daughter of Yaakov become defamed and shamed. And Yaakov kept quiet, and they said, ah, he's a smart man. So Rav Shimon Schwab, Zecher Tzaddik Levracha, explains the wisdom behind his reticence, behind his silence. He says like this. When it comes to Torah and mitzvot, we always tell people, even though you're not doing the mitzvot for the right reasons, do them anyway. We tell our children, go to Minyan on Shabbat, go for the ice cream. Go for the raffle. Is that what we want our children to do? Yes. Because eventually, they go enough times for ice cream, they'll get used to it, and they'll go for the right reasons. It's always like that. Do mitzvot, even though it's maybe for a compromised reason, because eventually, mitoch shelo lishma, ba lishma, the Gemara says. But there's one trait that has to be l'shem shamayim. That you can't have any personal interest in. It has to be done for the right sake, for the right motivation. And that is revenge. Nekama. If you're going to take a revenge, and you're going to react now to something that happened, you better see to it that the revenge that you're taking is
void of any personal interest. You're not doing it for your honor. You're not doing it because you feel burnt or slighted. Revenge is a very hard thing to do, even when you're revenging things that are bad. Yaakov Avinu heard what they did to his daughter. Yaakov Avinu kept quiet. First, he had to make sure that it's not personal, because the Gemara tells us he did a lot of favors for the city of Shechem where his daughter was raped. He built the marketplaces. He set up an economy for them. He did a lot of favors for Shechem, and this is what they do to him. He was scared that if he reacts, maybe it's personal. After all I do for them, then they do this. You're not doing it because of the sin then. You're doing it because of you helped them, they burnt you. That revenge over there is not pure. Unfortunately, we see many people, they see somebody doing the wrong thing, and they want to come and give a rebuke. They want to come and give a lesson. Before they come and give a rebuke, before they come and start screaming, you must analyze. Keep quiet for a second. What's causing you to scream? Because you love God so much? Because you want to fight the battles of God, Hashem Shemaim? Or maybe because this is a way to knock? This is your way to... Because she did something to you a week before, now you can knock her in the name of religion. Now you can use religion as a masquerade for your attempt to kosher up your revenge and mask it in the name of God. Yaakov Avinu was brilliant. He says, wait, before I overreact, relax. That was the wisdom. He was not hot to make a rebuke. He was not hot to scream, oh, the Shaim, oh, relax. Let me separate all my personal issues in order that I be able to make a stand that is solely the Shem Shamayim. Most of us are not in the position to make these stands. Most of us have issues. And for us, it's difficult to really scream and rebuke and make a revenge, ideally. Yaakov had that wisdom, but not after he kept quiet first. He was silent. He did it with yeshuva da'at, with clarity of mind. And then when his children came home and they said, this cannot happen to the daughter of Yaakov, to a Jewish lady, they had l'shem shamayim. It wasn't, daddy, after all you did for them. Yaakov then says, okay. Of course, their method Yaakov had a problem with, but that was exactly the wisdom that Yaakov possessed.